All right, welcome back. Last night at the University of Indianapolis, where eventually his mayoral papers will be stored, in his seventh State of the City address, Mayor Greg Ballard talked about a whole lot of things. Here to explain what the mayor said.
And his papers won't be stored until 2019, I think.
Might be 2016, you never know.
Yeah, Frank Short, how's that working out for you?
You don't know who it'll be.
Well, somebody's been polling.
And
Frank Short's name was not amongst the three.
You never know who it'll be. Is the chief of staff of the mayor of Indianapolis, Greg Ballard, Ryan Vaughn. Ryan, welcome.
What have I stumbled into here?
It's like my wedding all over again.
You've stumbled into Friday. So the purpose, the themes of the speech yesterday the mayor gave were what?
Quality of life in our neighborhoods. How do we build attractive neighborhoods to attract and retain people to choose to live in Marion County?
Mm-hmm.
We have to continue to make investments and improvements in public safety. We certainly have to double down our efforts and work in partnership with our public schools to improve education options. We have to improve infrastructure in our neighborhoods so that they're more attractive and safer.
Mm-hmm.
We have to be smart with how we incentivize and do economic development and skills training to ensure that we have jobs and people who are qualified for the jobs. And we have to be very deliberate about how we go about promoting our neighborhoods in our city so that people outside of this city appreciate and people inside of the city appreciate all the great things we have to offer and choose to live here.
The mayor's going out on the road starting Monday to push Rebuild Indy 2. Where's the money coming from for that?
The state. The state increased their allocation to the city for the purpose of helping us fund infrastructure. So they gave us an additional $9 million a year. And gas tax monies and wheel tax monies for the purpose of improving infrastructure. And so all we're doing is what every other mayor has ever done with that revenue, and we're going to issue debt against it and make improvements in our neighborhoods.
Now, but wasn't one of the issues, Ryan, the fact that when the mayor tried to do something similar and float $150 million worth of bonds, everybody in the council had signed off on it. Maggie signed off on it, had the news conference. Frank Mascari was there. And then all of a sudden, though, somebody did something and pulled the rug from underneath, and now the bond the mayor wanted to float wasn't there.
Well, as the former president of the city county council, I can tell you, you'll never hear somebody from the executive branch speak on behalf of a councilor. But I can tell you, yeah, we certainly had conversations about getting that initiative started several months ago. It was, in fact, introduced, and it just got stalled, and you'll have to talk to them about why that took place.
Ryan, one of the mayor in his speech yesterday, when he in his education section, talked about the fact that a zip code, and I'm going to paraphrase it, that a zip code should not define where you live. A zip code should not define the quality of education. The mayor talked about the 31 charter schools, 12,000 students in those mayor charter schools, which are virtually all, with maybe one or two exceptions, located within the IPS school area. As you look at trying to lift up neighborhoods and all of the neighborhoods here in Marion County, there are 21 public schools in the townships, not IPS, that are D and F schools. Given that number, and a disproportionate number exist in Wayne Township, are we at a point where as the mayor looks at improving educational options and that a zip code should not determine the quality of your education, looking at beginning to move some of the locations of new charter schools into those township areas where there are schools that are not performing? In other words, an argument can be made that the IPS area, particularly areas closer to the central part of the city, are now oversaturated with charter schools, but yet there are neighborhoods in the township areas. Those neighborhoods don't have those options for those parents.
Absolutely. I think we start this conversation with the premise of we prefer choice.
Mm-hmm.
We be in the city, you know, whether it's a charter or a private or a public. Parents need options so that they can send their kids to the school which best is going to suit them.
Mm-hmm.
There's been justifiable sense that almost all of the charter conversation for the last several years has been about Center Township in the IPS district. And largely that has been the case because of funding models. The dollars per pupil are higher in IPS than they are in some of the townships, and so it's easier for schools to start up and manage themselves as charters in that district. But without a doubt, and we've said this and we'll continue to say this, we need to have charter options in the township schools as well. And there's certainly an opportunity to pursue policy that will allow charters to be able to do that more easily.
Hold on, 239-1310. It's Amos and Abdul for a Friday. Ryan Vaughn, the Chief of Staff, to Mayor Greg Ballard. Or you might want to send us a text message at 37890, keyword Amos, 37890, keyword Amos, or an email at praiseindy.com talking about the State of the City speech from the perspective of the administration. You may have questions about what the mayor talked about and the initiatives that he talked about in the State of the City speech.
One of the things, Ryan, that the mayor talked about, sort of the thing was live Indy. He wanted people to come, live in the city. One of the big questions has always been, you folks have said time and again that you need to close our budget shortfall. We need 50,000 households making 50 grand a year. My distinguished colleague, to my immediate right, has wondered, why aren't we doing enough? Are we doing enough to sort of develop, instead of trying to import folks, what are we doing to raise the incomes of folks who are sort of, you know, working class, quote unquote poor, quote unquote poverty?
Sure. The you know, the 50,000 individuals earning $50,000 a year was simply to help give perspective to how challenging the budget situation is. You know, I've said when I've given this presentation, when I gave it to Amos when we met, talk about some of this stuff. I shared.
Say that again. We did meet.
Yes. When I gave it
no
to Amos,
blood would, no blood was shed yeah. on either side.
I said, you know, the same. You solve the same sort of fundamental math equation by saying 100,000 people earning 25,000, or you know, recruiting one guy who makes $5 billion annually. But that's just to help plug a budget gap. What we're doing to help improve the quality of life and attract people to live here are all those initiatives the mayor talked about, and specifically when you're talking about, how do we empower people to, you know, rise above their current state at any income level, frankly? It's by doing those things that we talked about, providing education opportunities, ensuring kids have access to quality education, ensuring that we then transition them from high school to a college opportunity, and then directly from a college opportunity to a job, knowing that we're rushing headfirst into an economy that's going to demand that kind of skill set in order for people to be successful.
Let me go to the phones at 239-1310 and Raymond. Hi there.
Hey, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I have a question for you. I was born and still live in the 46208 zip code, Butler Tarkington, and I enjoyed going to the parks and walking around the neighborhoods. But as I've grown up and older, I've noticed it just seems like the core parts of our city just feel depressed. They don't feel as energized as they used to be, and you see more people not without purpose but without destination, kind of like they're just walking around day and night. And of course, I'm not talking about their freedoms. I'm just saying the whole atmosphere just doesn't seem like there's an energy to the core parts of the inner city, such as your Hallvilles, your Butler Tarkington, your Martindale, Brightwood, those different areas. And people are, I guess you can call it the flight to the suburbs, but how do you re-energize the inner cities when we're seeing more and more houses that become dilapidated or the businesses closing? Has the mayor thought about how he's going to re-energize these core parts of our city?
Absolutely. This, you know, question couldn't be more appropriate for exactly what we're talking about, and you're exactly in the area that we're kind of discussing. So Butler Tarkington, part of the Midtown area from Mapleton, Fall Creek, all the way up to Broader Pool, has lost 28% of its population over the last decade. And so what you're seeing is a reality of what's taking place. It's not as invigorated as it once was. And we have to start making investments back in those areas. That's why the mayor announced yesterday we're going to put $5 million worth of improvements into Tarkington Park, because we want that to be a destination location where people want to live near. They want to reinvest in the same housing market that you've lived in your entire life. And those are the kind of, you know, strategic thinking and pulling from successful policies around the country about how to stimulate growth in neighborhoods, how to improve the quality of life for neighborhoods like the one you're referring to, that the mayor's focused on, and that the whole strategic plan really is aimed at addressing.
Let me follow up on that. The mayor made the announcement about the investment in Tarkington Park. Yet the community center, Martin Luther King, that was born out of the bosom of Butler Tarkington as the Butler Tarkington Neighborhood Community Center back 40 some odd years ago, is now in limbo, and there's a lot of rumors going around. And again, people putting two and two together and coming up with 16, you know, hearing about the city's investment is, aha, that's why that doggone center is closing, because they're coveting that land. From the administration's point of view, how serious do you take the closing of that community center and this limbo? Because this today is this last day, and nobody knows is it going to be reopened in 60 days, 120 days, or who knows when. How seriously concerned that is, because you're getting ready to make a major investment, and within a mile's radius of that building are some neighborhoods that are 40, 50% poverty, 60, 70% child poverty, and some neighborhoods that are on Chief Heights' worry list in terms of some of the neighborhoods that are crime problems.
Yeah, let me start by saying the two projects are entirely disconnected, mm-hmm. right? Our investment to Tarkington Park has been in place and part of a conversation ongoing for every bit of 2 years, mm-hmm. which is how we were able to get the renderings and build the financial models and get the community involved. This most recent news about the MLK Center is very troubling, but I will tell you it's part of a broader conversation that the mayor and I have had and that the mayor is seeking to have with leaders in the African-American community about the sort of the trouble a lot of these institutions are facing. You know, the Walker Building is another one. Mm-hmm. There's all kinds of sort of historically significant African-American institutions that financially are struggling a little bit. And how do we develop a plan to help preserve them? I'm not familiar with the finances of the MLK. I've been following the discussion on your program.
I think a lot of us are not familiar with it. But let me go back to this. Can you say categorically that the administration has no designs on that property?
Absolutely.
Because there is that buzz that's out there that's why they closed.
Yeah, I can say categorically there are no plans or designs on the MLK Center.
239-1310. We go back to the phones. And D, hi there.
Yes, I was going to ask him the question about MLK, and the Recorder had a good thing in their article.
Mm-hmm.
How can a community center who's outgoing has only been less than $20,000 a year all of a sudden have a 1,000% increase, and it was $200,000 when Ms. Collins took over?
Mm.
And are they going to save our center? Because I live in that neighborhood.
Is this something where the administration would support Martin Luther, the people, the board with Martin Luther King and the United Way, putting all the financials out there, using as the template what the Ballard administration has done in terms of transparency, in terms of budget documents and other things with I can't remember the phrase the mayor uses about transparency. There's a phrase y'all used, and I forgot what it was.
Yeah, you and me both.
That might have been before your time. But transparency has been a part of this administration. So should MLK have that same transparency and put out the financial documents so the community can see what the heck was going on?
Yeah, I'm hesitant to speak on behalf of an organization which, you know, we have no part of. It's certainly part of our community, and we would hope for its continued success. But there's never any harm, in my opinion, about being transparent about your finances, especially if you're in a position where you want to recruit people to help come in and keep your facility alive. I mean, you're not going to get people reinvesting in anything unless they have some sort of certainty that their investment is going to generate a positive momentum one way or the other.
Mm-hmm. Ryan, one of the things we talked about, Amos mentioned, some of the neighborhoods on Chief Heights watch list. Of course, it's been the issue of crime and the criminal murder rate. We're about 25 murders and some change. I want to say the 17 of the original 17 before we had the most recent 8. 80% of the folks had some sort of prior criminal felony. The 8 murders we had, 7 people had sort of priors. Can the mayor attract the families and the income and the wage earners when people think, my God, do I really want to move to Indianapolis? Although it's, you know, bad guy shooting bad guy, it's still people getting shot, and I don't want to be anywhere near any of that.
Yeah, that's a great question, and I'm glad it came up because there's a nuance to this conversation that I think needs to be flushed out a little bit. I was having this conversation this morning with a friend of mine from Forest Manor. And, you know, there is this sort of theme out there that, you know, the quote of bad guys killing bad guys. You've heard this repeated a few times, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that exists so that folks in this community can say, on one hand, if I'm not engaged in criminal conduct, there's no need for me to fear for my safety unreasonably on any given day. But in the same hand, you don't want to say that and then have people think, well, I'm not a criminal, therefore I don't need to be involved in the crime-solving problem. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of you kind of have to walk this fine line of saying, you know, if you're out there committing criminal activity, there is a high likelihood of probability that you will be a victim of crime. Mm-hmm. And if you're not, you're not. But that doesn't mean those of us who aren't don't have to be involved in helping fight crime.
Let me go back to the phones and Nat at 239-1310. Hi there. Nate, I'm sorry. Hi, Nate. Go ahead.
Nate, go ahead. Yeah. Hey, Amos, I go to the Eastern Star, and I wanted to see if we could get together. I don't know how to do it myself because I ain't, you know, but I just would like for everybody, you know, all the Christian people and, you know, the big churches to just meet downtown on the circle, and we just pray maybe once every week, just, you know, for the crime in our neighborhoods, man. It's scary to go outdoors anymore, you know, at night, you know. I just wish we could just get together and put something together where, you know, we could meet on a circle. What do you think about that?
Is it is from the mayor's perspective, is it time we have not had, and there's been this call for the big mass, you know, citizens stand up and say, we're not going to have, you know, this anymore. Are we at that point, you know, particularly after the quadruple murders, an eight in a fortnight?
You know, we're very committed and concerned about addressing these issues, especially, you know, the mayor, I think you probably heard talk passionately yesterday about, you know, black on black crime and losing an entire generation of young men of color. And, you know, while the mayor yesterday is giving his State of the City referencing these things, Public Safety Director Troy Riggs is literally meeting with President Obama to talk about My Brother's Keeper, and Douglas Harrison and the Front Porch Alliance is down in New Orleans on the City's United
front. With the City's United thing.
And so we're very dedicated to this issue, and we're bringing people in, bringing people together, but we have to bring people together with a plan on how to address it. And part of that is having this community conversation, like we're doing now.
Mm-hmm. On My Brother's Keeper, and the public safety director was at the White House. Congressman Carson was there as well, along with a lot of others. Given that a number of nationally prominent foundations are involved in My Brother's Keeper, and given that if the mayor wasn't at the University of Indianapolis last night, he would have been at the White House for the My Brother's Keeper thing, will the mayor, will the administration approach the Lilly Endowment, Clay Robbins and them, approach the Central Indiana Community Foundation and say, look, your peer foundations that are way up here in terms of assets are making this commitment on a national basis. What can we do here to have My Brother's Keeper Indy?
We have ongoing conversations with both of those organizations about our effort in fighting crime. You know, I'm not one to sort of air the business of these foundations, but, you know, I know for a fact that they support organizations independent of the city on these efforts already. The Central Indiana Community Foundation manages the city's crime prevention dollars and grants awards for that purpose. And I know that the Lilly Endowment pays attention to these issues and has funded organizations doing specific, you know, programs. What I will say is, as we develop a more comprehensive approach to this, as this community buy-in continues to increase, as we've seen over the last several weeks and months, it only makes sense that we would have a holistic plan. And how that's funded will be determined at a later date. But there's no doubt in my mind that those foundations recognize the need to take action in these areas.
Ryan, 239-1310, 239-1310. Ryan, what has been the neighborhood on the street level response when it comes to dealing with crime? Because obviously, you can only do so much with police. You can only lock so many people up. But until you get buy-in from the people who actually live there in the neighborhood, to say, you know what, we had enough of this drug house. We had enough of this place. You know, even the Parker Street murders. A lot of the folks are saying, yeah, well, there's always traffic coming in and out and back and forth. What is the city doing to engage these neighborhood folks so it can say, hey, you know, if you see something, you know, let us know before it gets to the point where, you know, four people are found dead and, you know, we get to where we are now.
Yeah, so so the response from the neighborhoods is to be perfectly frank, some really want to be hyper engaged. Some have yet to figure out how to do the engagement. But one of the key aspects of our success in crime fighting the city, and it won't matter if it's Greg Ballard or Amos Brown or Abdul Hakim Shabazz, who is the mayor of Indianapolis.
That's not until 2025.
Okay, Amos will write the first check in support.
First check to get out. No.
Hey, that would get me off the radio.
Yeah. You've got to engage the community, and you've got to get them the tools so that they can engage. So you saw yesterday in the mayor's state of the city the announcement of SafeTown. You'll see an announcement in the coming months about neighborhood action teams, which are a holistic approach of going into a community and talking about not only the crime that exists there, but let's talk about the health and hospital issues, the code violations, who's in need of services and what services, and how do we connect them with that? Sort of a holistic approach of dealing with quality of life issues that are precursors to criminal activity in addition to tamping down existing criminal activity.
On mass transit, the mayor also in the speech last night talked about we're going to finally build. They've been talking about this like forever. The transit center downtown, and this goes into mass transit. How concerned is the administration that we've got a mass transit plan that's moving through the legislature that's kind of bifurcated? That one of the key counties that originally was not in the plan, Hendricks, was put back in the plan, now has been taken back out of the plan. The rail is in the plan, but the funding mechanism would be such that it would make rail not competitive. How concerned is it that we could have a mass transit plan come out that's just that's worse than we got now?
Well, with all due deference to our elected leaders in the Indiana General Assembly, while we hope that a bill comes out that makes sense for Indianapolis, we are not going to wait on a bill to come out that makes sense for Indianapolis in order to improve transit here. We have some ability to improve what we're doing. You see the transit center as the first big step towards that. We can talk about routing. We can talk about improved buses. We can talk about more regular buses and things of that nature. It's tough to say what's going to come out of the General Assembly. Obviously, the more comprehensive the plan is, the more open it is, the better it is for the entire region, not just the city. But we will work with whatever latitude is afforded us.
Let me come back to something Raymond said about some neighborhoods kind of being kind of blah. I guess the way to say it. And in the beginning of his speech, the mayor talked about growing number of people choosing to live local, shop local, eat local. They want access to an authentic urban lifestyle, and they want it right outside their door, and mentioned the example of the cafe inside the city market. But there are a number of areas in the city, both older neighborhoods and toward the inner part of the city and then out in the townships, where you don't have that ability to live local, shop local, or eat local. You've got to go either to one of the big regional shopping centers. We've got two regional shopping centers that are basically in bad shape. Everybody knows the Lafayette Square story. The Washington Square story is just probably a hair behind that. Are we at a point where, as the administration looks at beefing up neighborhoods, and this is something that I have been critical of administrations going back to Bill Hudnut, that mayors of Indianapolis have not been aggressive at trying to leverage retail into our older neighborhoods of the city, that we just sit back and let everybody overcrowd Keystone at the Crossing, or try, if they can't get into Greenwood down in Johnson County, they over go up 31 up to Stop 10 Road, or they overload the I-65 at the Southport exit. What are we at a point now in terms of to do this live indie thing, to be more aggressive with retailers, to maybe make the mayoral journey to Bentonville, Arkansas, and to Minneapolis, to Target and some others, to say, hey guys, this is what we're trying to do here? And
why somebody
got
talk about building a Target not too long ago in a nearby neighborhood, but some folks got mad because that was not a historical Meijer. Oh, that's right. A large grocery store chain.
No, if it was Target knows how to do vertical. Meijer knows how to do expansive.
Well, Spiders is kind of tingling on this one there, big guy.
No, I've seen urban Targets. I've never seen an urban Meijer.
The answer to that is yes. So there are really two initiatives. Three points I want to make here. One, there are two initiatives out there that are aimed at just that. Rezone Indy, which helps us address antiquated zoning regulations that either sometimes don't permit retail establishments in these neighborhoods. I mean, the whole sort of culture used to be you build these neighborhoods to the exclusion of everything else but a house. Now people want integrated neighborhoods where they have these retail opportunities. So you have to address that in sort of the regulatory side. Also, is what we're doing called Plan 2020. Plan 2020 is a two-year planning progress. It's taking place on the first floor of Old City Hall. You'll hear more about this in the coming weeks. But that is designed to overlap the actual physical plans we make for the city, thoroughfare plan, right-of-way plan, so forth and so on, with all of these quality of life issues. How do we involve retail? How do we involve parks? How do we involve all of these kind of things? Mm-hmm. So you have that. But the key here and why those two things are important is that unless you can take to these retail establishments across the country a plan that says, hey, by the way, you're not going to be the only investment, and we're not asking you to come in and make an investment to the exclusion of all others. We're asking you to come alongside of us and see this is the comprehensive plan for what this area can be. These are the regulations we've changed to empower you to invest here. This is the neighborhood focus of what they want to see, and this is how they're going to get there. Once they have that plan, once they see some level of certainty and investment, they're much more likely to come alongside you than just be sort of muscled in there to begin with.
Let me use Tarkington Park as an example. How do you overcome the retail redlining? That when they look at it, okay, Ryan Vaughn, you and that Ballard guy, you're putting in the $5 million and you're redoing the Tarkington Park. But when we run the numbers, when we run the income numbers, when we run the diversity numbers, we don't like the complexion of that area in spite of what you've put in there. That's retail redlining. What does the administration do to say, wait a minute, Mr. Retailer, the folks in this neighborhood have this spending power. How dare you belittle the residents of my city? Because I think at some point what has happened in the Washington Square area, which has not had that crime stigma that Lafayette Square had, for that center to deteriorate the way it has, that's some kind of redlining going on. I don't think the city has been aggressive to simply say, hey, we're not going to stand for that.
Well, you have to present these retailers a plan.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
I mean, you have to present them a plan that says, I understand this is how you perceive this area to be now. Mm-hmm. But this is the plan to move this area forward, and this is what you can anticipate, and that's why your investment here early is important. Mm-hmm. But let's also not fool ourselves. We're not going to try and put a round peg in a square hole. I mean, there are certain retailers that are just never going to, they build their retail stores.
Crate and Barrel ain't coming to Hallville.
Yeah, Crate and Barrel, no. But a baby Walmart could.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. But again, you got to build the case for them. You can't just simply sort of demand that they participate because of some sort of civic goodwill. They've got to see their business. They've got to see there's a possibility.
One thing, Ryan, before we break here, urban regentrification is always, it's not just Indianapolis, it's all over the country. As people try to, as property taxes become less and less of a source of revenue for cities, which try to build off of income, how do you do that right balance of bringing the high wage, high income earners, back to your city, but at the same time remembering, folks like our parents and grandparents who've lived in XYZ neighborhood for years, and they don't want to be dislocated.
Yeah, I mean, the mayor made a point yesterday, when I think is very sort of a great observation, which is when you look at major cities across America, we're probably the only major city in America where you could live in a $10 million condo or a 20-acre farm. We literally have just about every lifestyle you want. Now, we do have certain lifestyles or income levels where there's a gap of product, right? We need more single-family houses in certain areas, less in others, more combined housing in others. What we have to do is make sure that everyone that lives here has an option, and that's an attractive option. You heard the mayor say, I want people to have a hard time choosing between our great neighborhoods.
I'm going to take a quick break, and then I want to ask the chief of staff the things that weren't in the speech. There was one or two little things that weren't in the speech. I realize he didn't want to talk, for the full 60 minutes.
Oh, you mean like the Democrats subpoenaing records that they already have if they would just open their folders and look for them?
No, not that.
just checking.
No. little things. a couple sports things.
Oh, you mean like a soccer field or a soccer stadium that basically no one's collecting any tax revenue if you build it, you'll collect tax revenue afterwards?
Some Hendricks County economic things. it's Amos and Abdul for Friday. Let me go to the phones and Miss B. Hi there.
Hello, how are you?
I'm fine.
Okay. I wanted to ask Ryan something. I haven't heard him since he got off the council board. I wanted to ask, when he's talking about revitalize whatever it is to the different parts of Indianapolis, have you ever thought about doing something for the children? You know, what they going to do for the kids? You know, revitalize the Y or the health centers for children around for like Planter House used to have and sports and things for them. And he's taking everything for, they taking everything closer to white folks. They don't care about black children. And I'm wondering why they don't try to do that.
That's a great question. The mayor talked a lot about early childhood education, but activity centers for just basic children, I would say 6 to 16, 17.
Sure, and it's part of what we're doing. Mm-hmm. You know, our investment in parks, which is our greatest resource to provide programming and our greatest number of facilities, you know, over 11,000 acres of parks, many of them have a facility within the park that we have already activated or will continue to activate, is a big part of our new focus. And we've, you know, we went out to for bid, is the wrong word, or an RFP, I suppose it was what it was, to talk about how to get more programming in our parks. I think it got some negative press because people misinterpreted that as us trying to
privatize the parks.
But what, in fact, we were trying to do, and, you know, the responses are still being evaluated, was see who out there is running programming but needs a facility. Mm-hmm. And how do we marry them up so that we can reduce the facility cost for these right. groups that do things like, you know, Girls Inc. or the Boys and Girls Club or the Peace Learning Center or whatever. Put them in our facilities so that our kids have access to that. We got a great pilot that's going to take place in Garfield Park this summer that we hope to build off of. But yeah, it's certainly a focus, and I appreciate the call. I hope the caller, I want them to know for me.
Mark,
and
you haven't said anything about Douglas. Well, Garfield. Everybody can get to Garfield.
No, correct. Yeah, we I can't say something about all the parks we have. We have an incredible number of them, hundreds. But what we are doing is trying to develop a system-wide approach to provide programming in our parks for our youth. We understand that's an important part of not only their educational development, but also keeping kids out of trouble.
Yeah, don't leave out Douglas. Ms. B will call back. I appreciate it, Ms. B. Three things that I did not hear in the speech. One, in the context of neighborhoods dealing, is there another way once and for all to deal with abandoned homes, which I think has been the frustration of every mayor in my memory in this city, and I know it has been a frustration for the administration. The other was my favorite, the soccer field, and the judicial center.
Sure.
Why nothing? No, was that just, hey, we ran out of time and got cut in the last cut edits?
No, not at all. I mean, we could, you know, we will publish next week a plan that it's almost 50 pages long that addresses a lot of more of what we're doing. But when you have 30 minutes on television to talk about it, you have to highlight your areas. And we wanted to hit our five key areas. But I would tell you.
So State of the City 2.0 coming next week.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. And in the release of a, you know, what is our dynamic strategic plan on all of these areas we discussed. Mm-hmm. But specifically to abandoned housing, you know, we have relaunched the land bank. And we have reformulated under existing laws in partnership with counselors, bipartisan group of counselors who helped us develop this not-for-profit so that we can get more houses that are abandoned and were seized, refurbished and back open for single-family homes. And not just single-family homes, but single-family homes owned by people who are invested in staying there long-term, mm-hmm. not by massive out-of-state for-profit corporations that are just turning and burning them.
Mm-hmm. Judicial center.
Judicial center is an ongoing RFP. You know, we went out there, shared our vision along with the sheriff and many other elected officials, including the council, to take a look at whether or not we could save money and consolidate these services into one new building, knowing that regardless of whether we do this or not, we have to build a new jail because the old one is falling down. But it's an ongoing RFP. People know what we're looking for. People have responded to that bid, and once those responses have been evaluated, you'll hear more about it.
Is there a reason why the four people who responded have never been named, who those four entities are, so at least we can see what their track record is, what they've done in other communities across the country?
I think there were five responses.
Yep.
Yeah. And it's not customary to release their names during the evaluation period. After the evaluation period, certainly. Okay. Just so everyone's clear in the process here, you know, you do an RFQ where you request people to demonstrate that they're qualified to undertake this project. Mm-hmm. Then you sort of shortlist down to the most qualified, open it up to the public, let everyone know who bid. Mm-hmm. And then you do an RFP right. where you force those to compete with one another for a very specific proposal.
So right we're still in the queue.
We're in the queue. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then the other thing, this soccer field. The
soccer stadium. You called the soccer stadium yesterday.
That's field, all right. Stadium. Legislative Service Agency says the math doesn't work. I don't think the math works. Obviously, city taxpayers would not be on the hook for this. They want state taxpayers to be on the hook. This is not like the Colts that were an established major league team that had played and won a Super Bowl. This is an unknown, basically an expansion team in a middle level league in soccer. Why should taxpayers pay until we see how this thing is going to draw?
Well, we don't know if they should or shouldn't. First mm-hmm. of all, we'll see what the General Assembly decides. I mean, again, we're not putting city tax dollars at risk. We're putting state tax dollars at risk. Mm-hmm. I will tell you that, and this is true of all of our sports franchises and our convention franchises and not a franchise, but our convention business and entertainment business, that by far the biggest benefactor of those enterprises is the state of Indiana. Mm-hmm. You know, they make a lot of money on the sales tax generated from those things. So why is it a good idea? Why not? The wisdom of the Indiana General Assembly will make that determination. I will tell you, however, a couple facts that I find interesting. One, this team, without having played a game, has sold more tickets than any other team in their league. So that's pretty interesting. We have a significant market for soccer here. And two, you know, you referenced a very well-established, proven market, which is the Indianapolis Colts. But let's not forget, we built them a stadium before we even had them in the city.
Right.
So
they cost half price because the Lilly Endowment and the Cranon Endowment paid half the cost.
Sure. But
if they pay half the cost of the soccer field,
but we take big risks as a city in order to grow. And although we typically think of ourselves as exceptionally conservative in the Midwest, Indianapolis is very aggressive and has been very successful by being aggressive. So we're not for it against it right now. What we're saying is we'll see what the Indiana General Assembly decides. But making an investment of that type is certainly not new to this city.
Is this thing going to use enough days? Victory Field, just in a baseball situation, uses enough days to make that investment worthwhile. The dome was a successful investment because there was a whole lot of things you could put in that convention type space that made it worthwhile. There's 14 games, as I understand it, for the soccer team, and nobody has provided any information as to how many other days out of the 360 or 250 days would be filled to make that stadium work.
Every facility we have is a multi-use facility, and it's been the position of the mayor that should this come before us for our consideration, that we would also require this one to be a multi-use facility.
When you say consideration, I thought this is a done deal.
No.
Have you ever lobbied the General Assembly?
All the time.
You know, a whole bunch of people thought that second sentence was a done deal, too.
Yeah, well. And we know until the 15th of, the 15th of March, anything. I'm going to let him have the last question. Oh, one other thing. You know, the mayor talked about crime and violence in the black community and talking about neighborhoods and talking about all these things and trying to engage the community and to live Indy. In 7 years, going on 7 years, he has never given an interview to the professional journalists of the Indianapolis Recorder. I'm not talking about Abdul, not talking about me. I'm talking about the professional journalists at the Recorder. First mayor in the modern era not to do that. As this administration works to engage the residents of Indianapolis, particularly when he's talking about the violence issue and these initiatives that are coming down and talking about that every life matters. Will the mayor sit down and give an interview with the recorder? I know if you call it for 3 o'clock on Sunday morning, the journalist with the recorder would show up.
There are innumerable ways to engage our community, whether it's social media, attending community events, walking door to door, as he has done, meeting with clergy, meeting with community centers, and the mayor does it nonstop, 365 days a year, multiple hours.
But he's given interviews to the Indianapolis Star.
Right.
Why not, in his tenure, give an interview to the third oldest African-American newspaper in this country, the oldest one in this state?
Well, I can only speak to the time that I've been there. And I've not had a request from the Recorder to speak with the mayor on a topic in the last 2 years.
Consider this the request.
Shannon can call.
No, I'm putting it out in the community is asking that question.
Fair enough. I'll forward the request on.
I mean, if he's very, particularly when he, in a speech that was extremely eloquent in talking about lives and talking about we have to do something, and having Doug Harrison down at the launch of Citizens United, having the public safety director there at the White House with my brother's keeper, what you were talking about is that some initiative is coming. It would seem to me the way you launch those kinds of initiatives to my community is the head guy talking directly to the African-American community in their media of trust. And the leading one here, besides these radio stations, is the Indianapolis Recorder. If this is a serious initiative of the person at the top of the pyramid, then he ought to be willing to talk to the professional journalists at that newspaper and make his case.
I would say this.
Directly.
Your definition of directly is a little bit different than the mayor's, because the mayor would rather the people hear it directly, not through the filter of a media. And so he does go to the community and speak to them directly. He does go to clergy and speak to them directly. He does speak to them directly through social media and other outlets.
And he would be willing to be the only mayor in the modern history of Indianapolis not to give an interview to the oldest newspaper in this state.
No, what I'm telling you is he delivers his message directly. I have not been requested by that media outlet to speak to him in the 2 years I've been there. If that changes, as it just changed apparently, then I'll ask him to consider the request.
All right, Ryan Vaughn. That's right. He was going to get the last question.
Get the last question. Okay. My good friend's comments notwithstanding, how do you, as a ballot administration, explain to the general public that the things the city does is for the benefit of all citizens? One of the an interesting criticism that came across the Twitter feed yesterday from some folks over on Market Street was that the mayor is only doing this for the rich. He is only doing this for the affluent. He's not addressing income inequality, and basically, you know, he and the ballot administration, this is like the French Revolution, let them eat cake as the peasants of France starve, and you know, one day they'll all rise up and start singing Do You Hear the People Sing and marched around Monument Circle over and over and over again.
This entire plan, this focus on building quality of life in neighborhoods is just that. It's trying to build the quality of life in all of our neighborhoods, and it's doing it based on the absolute irrefutable realization that as our revenues go down, our ability to provide services to the folks in need diminishes. And if we cannot provide services to the folks in need, then their quality of life is going to go down. So in order for us to have the revenue to do that, we've got to improve the quality of life in our neighborhoods. We've got to attract people of all incomes to live here and to stay here so that we can have the revenue, so that we can make the investment to provide services who need them.
Ryan Vaughn, Chief of Staff to Mayor Greg Belder. Thanks very much for being with us. Glad to have you. We'll be back with our remaining moments. It's Amos and Abdul for a Friday.